had a consequence for another ethnic group. So I guess the short answer is there is some ethnic diversity on the committee, but that was, I didn't do that as intentionally as making sure there was philosophical.
Okay. All right, thank you.
But since Senator Brown brought this up, this is a question that I hear a lot at the national level. Mm-hmm. In your experience as a prosecutor, is there a disparity between how we deal with regular cocaine and crack cocaine?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, I think in New York, they set it up that crack cocaine had a much more serious penalties than powder cocaine. We don't have that set up in our guidelines. They're specifically had different penalties for those two types of drug. And they're kind of, so I think the answer in Oregon, we don't have that situation.
So 1 gram of cocaine is equal to 1 gram of crack.
Yeah, I forget the way it broke down, but it had the effect of, I'm sorry, did I say New York? I meant federal.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was thinking of the, so we don't suffer from that problem in Oregon because we did not treat different types of cocaine differently like they began to in the 80s with crack cocaine.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Going back to the economics, the prison economics thing, and that seems to be the key to the future. This person that you're hiring or this firm you're hiring, could you explain exactly a little bit more what you expect to get out of it? Is it going to be a cost analysis? Mm-hmm. How much is it going to cost? As much benefit? Is that that's where you're going?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I already hired an economist. So what I did, and there's budget implications to that. What I did is I had two research analysts, and I realized that this was kind of the future as we wanted to have cost-benefit analysis. So I took those positions and created an economist position. I already hired that person, and I basically asked him to look at what was going on in Washington, the way Steve Ost was doing his cost-benefit analysis. And what I've found through that, to answer your question, is the main thing an economist does is tests relationship between two things to see if there's a causal relationship. And they do that statistically. Only after you do that can you then do the next part, which is, okay, what are you avoiding? You first have to make sure that two things are related, and then you can figure out how much it costs, how much you save by avoiding different areas. So we're trying to do that whole thing. We get the model that he's put together. You basically take the costs of crime and then try to make a ratio between those costs and the benefit of crimes avoided. So that I've already hired that person, and I've given him the blueprint of what's happening in Washington. So I'm not planning on hiring a firm or anything like that. I think I've got the people that could do it in a blueprint for it.
To follow up, how soon will you get this analysis done, do you think? What's the timeline?
I'm hoping next session I'll have what I've done. Sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson. I've already talked to Department of Corrections and the Oregon Youth Authority, and they are very much want to cooperate and do this together. And so I think I'll start with those two because they're the biggest budgets. But I need to also, I think if you recall from Steve Ose's presentation, some of the big savings is not only in Oregon Youth Authority, but in early prevention. And so I need to loop into the Commission on Children and Families and some of those things so we can quantify what the investments in that area would do and ultimately link it to savings in prison beds and things like that, victimizations you could avoid. It's really, in some ways, it's just organizing the discussion in a different way and having it based upon the studies that are currently out there on what we can expect from those. The hard part to this all is, and the biggest step on this or Senate Bill 267, which is the, you know, kind of the evidence-based practices mantra, is sooner or later we need to go out and see if the programs that are supposed to get these returns are actually getting those returns. And as you know, the way we deliver services in criminal justice is like the way is the same way we deliver services in other areas. That happens at the county level. And so, but sooner or later we need to get to that part. But the next stage would be to put together a portfolio of investments for this next session.
Craig, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit more about the model that they use in Washington? Is it based on the executive branch, legislative?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about the funding structure or anything you know about that.
Absolutely. The model for the Washington State Institute Public Policy itself in Washington is an interesting one. Basically, they were created by the legislature with a budget note. And so they're created there. When I worked for the legislature, Bill Taylor and I were trying to find in statute what created the Washington State Institute of Public Policy, and we couldn't find anything. It was created as a budget note. They've got a staff of about 14 on staff, and they are their administrative support is at the Evergreen State College. But their office is right downtown, right next to the Capitol, and they work solely for the legislature. And the legislature has a board of directors that's heavily legislative, but they also have academic-type people who can basically be a serve as a peer review for what Steve Oss is doing and also direct where they should be doing their inquiries. So they're doing that in that kind of model, and they've been able to – they don't only do criminal justice – they work right now. Their main focus is moving to K through 12. So is that what you were asking?
I think so. So you're saying that they study whatever the legislature directs them to. Now, if I could follow up with that, if let's say one of our members wants to have a research question answered, do they call up this institute, or
how
is it determined their agenda?
Mr. Chair, committee, I think. What I've seen is they actually put into law, if you look at some of the questions they've been asked, and they're in, I put Steve's report in your binder. It looks like some of them have actually they passed a bill to tell them to look at this and report back, or it would be like a budget note. The thing that I think we'd all have to be careful of if having a policy committee or a policy institute like that is not overloading them with too many questions at once and making sure that they have a timeline that they feel is doable. So I think that's the key governance thing is how do you limit what they're focusing on and do you make sure that you have a timeline that they can give you something substantive.
To try to deflect individual legislators.
Exactly.
Go run in this
we wouldn't want them to be the one that when you have a question like how many blank offenders go to DOC. I can answer that pretty quickly with the statistical people at DOC. What we want from these people is more the analytical, what would the savings be or how would we do this, that type of question, which usually takes a little more time to flesh out.
Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Craig, is that group then general fund funded as an agency or are they funded through legislative administration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah, this is the funny thing. We've been trying to figure. They're kind of coy about how they're funded. Frankly, they have a their operating budget's about $1 million. That doesn't make sense to me when they have a staff of 14. So I know that there's some other way that that's getting paid for, or they're really getting a bargain. They also, I think, what they do is when I was telling the chair about, they have a budget note or a legislative piece, they give them $50,000, $100,000 to do that particular study. But you'd have to have an operating budget plus that type of thing. And the thing I've never really been able to figure out, I've looked into this over the years. Again, when I worked for the Judiciary Committee, we had a bill to create something like this. The other question is, what all does the university give them as far as administration? I've never figured that out because they're not housed at the university. So, but does that partially answer?
Yeah. Would you like him to dig a little bit further into their funding mechanism?
Well, it's interesting because if, and I see Doug has a comment, it's interesting to me because if you I mean, if you're talking about a general fund funded, or even if you're doing, even if you're looking at funding it based on the amount of work, there's going to be some fixed overhead there that has to be covered,
and
that's going to be general fund, I think.
I mean,
in my way of thinking, the way it works. And then if you're going to study a particular project, you're either going to maybe apply for grant funding of some kind,
and
or matching funds of some kind.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, the thing I think they've explicitly avoided is getting any federal grant money. They've specifically said we work for the legislature, and so my belief, and Doug might know, I don't think they get any federal grants. So that just means I haven't quite figured out where their money flows from, because.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm not sure about the federal grant thing, but I do know in talking to Mr. Ose before the hearing, there is a core staff. He's the
associate.
Associate. There's a director, and that may be the $1 million for the core staff.
Right.
And then ask $50,000 to study this,
hire
to study that, they'll hire folks in to do that. And it sounded like a lot of people they hire are academics, which may be the tie into the higher ed also, mm-hmm. to do special studies. But there is a core staff, and I'm not sure, I'm guessing 5 or 6 from what he talked about, but I'm not sure of that.
Yeah, and
I'll get to your question in a second. My understanding is that if the legislature directed DHS to take part in this study, that would then come on, DHS would then pay for it.
Hmm.
Senator Burdick.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's you mentioned the bill that went through, mm-hmm. When you were on judiciary staff, and we actually passed, if we're talking about the same thing, that passed that bill last session. It's creating the Criminal Justice Institute at Portland State, and one of the reasons they wanted to get into statute, it's part of the Hatfield School, one of the reasons they wanted to get in statute was so that they would have more stature to apply for federal funding and so on. So when we think about this kind of research in Oregon, they are not general fund funded, but they are definitely a resource,
mm-hmm.
That we should be thinking about when we have these discussions.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, and Senator Burdick, and we've used that resource with the Racial Profiling Committee, and I think it's worked pretty well. And so, kind of anticipating this line of, you know, these questions. So that right now, when I went on their website, the Washington State Institute of Public Policy has a staff of 14 on their website, and they also have a sentencing commission with a staff of 8. So what I believe is the policy work is what really is important in this area, and the sentencing commission, no offense to my fellow sentencing commissions, it tends to be much more administrative. And so I put my focus staff-wise on that policy area.
Okay.
So we should be on slide 15 now. Next area is the Meth Task Force. This has been one of the things that we've worked on a lot. Basically, in 2003, the governor did a public safety review, and the Meth Task Force was one of the things that we knew we wanted to bring together, a group of policy people on meth. As you all know, we had prevention, enforcement, and treatment people, and we basically developed those policies. And thanks to you all in particular, and particularly Senator Burdick, but all of you, we had those successes. I felt like they were successes on House Bill 2045 and Senate Bill 907. We did that work. That was a specific area we worked on at the governor's request. We had a burn grant to kind of get it started, and that's been something we've continued through this session. And, you know, so basically thank you for passing those things. I mean, that was a beautiful thing to get together the experts and then have the legislature really, I think, run with it. I've been part of those things where they don't work out quite so well, too. So that was a beautiful thing, and we saw a couple great things come out of that. The two highlights to me were the meth lab reductions. Trying to quantify the cost-benefit of avoiding a meth lab, acknowledging that we're not fixing the meth addiction problem, But when you a meth lab in itself has a huge problem associated with it, and you all, I don't need to belabor that. But when we figure this next slide is shows how many labs per month we're actually finding. I'm very happy to report that in November and December, there was one lab in Oregon that was found and shut down. And that is just a beautiful thing. Incidentally, the one lab was an old cleanup. It was an old one that had been basically, even though they're an old one, you still have to go in and clean it up. So that was just one of the things that we focused on was the meth task force. And the other area that I felt like that came out of that legislative package was the drug courts. Those were the two biggest parts. So that was item three, and we covered that yesterday with Devarshi. So I was just going to move through that third item of our what drives our budget to slide. Where are we? If we went all the way to slide 28.
I like it when you turn a page.
You like that? Okay. It's a page turner.
Craig, before you go on,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, one of the questions that we have been discussing and we'll discuss in the future is whether or not administration of the drug court program is more logically under you or the courts. Do you
right.
have an opinion on that?
Chair Shields, I really have told everyone we want to do whatever makes sense. Senator Burdick knows that when that was given to us to administer, I was actually resistant to it because I try to be a policy-focused agency. I think Devarshi's done a wonderful job with the grant program, and I'm just sitting down. I hope to sit down with the Judicial Department and figure out. We just want to make sure it works right. There were some things about making sure we could get all the treatment dollars to flow through judicial. It sounds like they're working that out. And so what Doug and I have talked about is at some point I always assumed that this budget would get operationalized or however you want to, I don't know what the budget ease is, but it certainly wouldn't make sense to have a continuing competitive grant process that each county that I just started up with a grant, they have to reapply each time. At some point, that I would think you'd want to have operationalized. So I'm certainly, what I've told Judicial and everyone else is I just want to make sure it happens smoothly if it happens, and I'm not opposed to it. So item four, page 28 on our spine-tingling presentation is LPSICs. Another thing that we do is we coordinate local public safety coordinating councils. That's what a LPSIC is, if you ever hear people in your counties talking about that. Basically, it's the county public safety officials, the chiefs of, if there's big cities, the sheriff, the DA, the judge, the people who run juvenile, the people who run probation, and the people who run mental health, and a lot of times the Oregon State Police and the Oregon Youth Authority. That's a local planning group that we basically support, and what we do is we try to get them talking, sharing ideas, sharing concerns, because what we found is they bubble up and we're kind of the ones presenting them to you all at the state level anyways. So we do that. That's been what that meant was that kind of went dormant. So that meant one of my staff basically went to LPSIC meetings in almost every county to kind of get us into that coordination approach. And we do an annual conference of LPSICs. So that's another area since I've been here that we've tried to kind of reinvigorate, and I've been working on that.
If I could, just a comment. I really want to thank you for your initiative on breathing new life into the LPSIC. Some were operating okay, and some were not. But functionally, I mean, they kind of operate as a COG, Council of Governments, for public safety-oriented efforts. And it was amazing. Those got going in 95, 97, something like that.
I think 11:45.
It was amazing that all the public safety, entities in our various counties where much of the services delivered were not talking to one another. Just kind of inconceivable. So anyway, thank you very much for that initiative.
Before we move on to that, Craig, have you considered any KPMs related to LIPSIC? They operate. I mean, one thing that I'm concerned about is that maybe they're not meeting as often as they should. Maybe they're not including all the community partners. Those are some of the things that I've heard in my community.
That's Chair Shields. I see what you're saying, and I'm glad to try to figure those out. It's
maybe that's something we can talk about.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, and we're trying to slide 31. A couple of new projects we're doing is Lane County, as they were trying to work with trying to get a public safety levy that Doug Harkle wrote and also the sheriffs and everyone worked on. They developed a report card kind of for a county to evaluate how they're doing, kind of a performance measure for each county. And the other counties want to kind of blueprint that, so we're helping get that idea out with the other counties and work on, just sharing basically what they're doing. They're all working really hard, and sometimes it helps for them to know what the people in the next county are doing. Slide 32, racial profiling. So we're moving through my budget to the areas that, as I'm focusing more on research and analysis and cost-effectiveness analysis and sentencing, these are the areas that I'm focusing less on, not because they're not important, but because on racial profiling, I think we found a funding source for Portland State University to take this over. So the background on racial profiling is Symbol 415. For those of you in judiciary, House Judiciary, we already heard a bill on this. Slide HB 2102. The Racial Profiling Committee analyzes traffic stop information to see if people who are ethnic minorities are stopped more often, and probably more importantly, because I think most people in law enforcement will tell you can't even see what color a person is when you're stopping them at dark and things. What we also analyze is how often they're searched incident to arrest. So you can see if because of whatever reason, either out and out, I personally believe that that what affects that is more, unconscious, if there's some kind of unconscious thing that people are treating different minorities groups differently. So what the Senate Bill 415 group did is got us the ability to have, again, some academics kind of analyze that data and write a report on it. And that was something that we've done since 2001. We also have a community outreach part of that to help law enforcement officials reach out to ethnic communities. Hillsborough, for example, in Washington County is almost a real example of how to do that with the way Chief Louis reached out to some of the Latino communities in Washington County. So long story short, between when we were developing the governor's recommended budget and now, we identified a federal funding source to continue that program, and the Oregon Department of Transportation would be the grant recipient of this federal grant, and we think that with this grant we'll be able to continue that. And since I'm already, if you look at slide 33, I've been contracting that out to PSU anyways. The institute that Senator Burdick mentioned is at the Hatfield School. I've been contracting with them to do the work. Now that we've identified ongoing funding for it, the bill that's up this session is HB 2102, and what it would do is would say PSU is going to administer that program, work with the LEC, the Racial Profiling Committee, and I would basically step away from that. So, are there any questions about that? Or?
Representative Penhill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Craig, on that kind of an issue, I mean, and keep in mind I've only done ride-along, so I'm kind of, but so you do a ride-along with the state police, you're out there, you're using a laser, you're stopping people based on evidence 1,500 to 2,500 feet away. how do you weight that? I mean, you know, so the last ride along I did, the first five cars we stopped were all minorities.
Mm-hmm.
The slowest one was going 84 miles an hour. So it's like, okay, how do you weight that when you're using a laser and you're stopping mm-hmm. people based on the evidence that you're getting at that kind of distance? So, I mean, that would tell you you stopped five minorities, but
right.
What does it tell you about the people that are speeding on the interstate? That would get pretty confusing in terms mm-hmm. of how do you weight what happens. And then you mentioned this, but after dark, again, this is interstate stuff, nothing to do with in town, and I know that would be much different, but you're out on the interstate using the same technology. You can't see who anybody is until you get there.
Chair and Representative Hanna, we do a couple things. We analyze the data to see what's happening with stops. The thing that I forgot to mention, we also do what I would call a perception poll, that we poll people from different minorities to see if the perception that there's racial profiling exists. And what we've seen is that has actually continued and maybe increased. And so what I see it as, and also very much we work with Lieutenant Colonel Greg Williford from Oregon State Police is on the LECC, and we work in cooperation with the Chiefs and Sheriff's Associations. So to answer your question, I think what we've encouraged is collect the information, analyze it, and respond to it, and respond to the communities. And I think you have to be very sensitive to making sure that the communities, the ethnic minority communities, know you're taking this seriously, and law enforcement knows that just by the inquiry alone, you're not saying that they're racist. And that's really the struggle. That's the balance. And I feel like that's what we've tried to achieve.
And, you know, nobody wants this to go on, but I think I just had an eye-opening experience mm-hmm. when I'm out there. And, again, I question how you would weight these things. To this experience again.
Mm, I see what you're saying.
The only people because you mentioned how many people get searched when they get pulled over. The only people that we searched, we didn't search them because of their racial profile, but we searched them because they didn't have any driver's license
mm-hmm.
or ID.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason for search was we had to put them in the car and take them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, they were all minorities.
You probably did a search incident or an incident to an inventory with failure to have insurance or failure to have a license.
We impounded the vehicle. So each time somebody got searched, it was because we impounded the vehicle and you were going to transport them.
Right.
Now, then I say in my mind, is that because they were a minority or because they didn't have insurance, they didn't have ID, and the vehicle got impounded? And that's what I'm saying. When you're doing a study like that, I mean, I'm kind of going back to your, you know, your statistical data. When you start mm-hmm. doing that, somehow you have to weight the fact that if you're doing it for the reason that
mm-hmm.
you're going to impound the vehicle, that's different than if it's truly a minority. And I don't know.
I see what you're saying.
It gets pretty complicated, but you would have to weight that data somehow in order to have statistically significance to the point of that it was a minority.
Right.
I mean,
a chair and representative. It when you say weight it, I mean we are just trying to collect the data first. And when an officer does it, Representative Barker should probably explain this better than I would. But we're able to collect it by the way when an officer makes a stop, there's a code that they can basically let us then analyze. You know. And so the weight part, I don't know exactly how to answer that question.
If I may, Mr. Chair, we enter pretty raw data. I mean, after a stop, in order to clear the stop, you tell radio I'm stopping somebody in Portland. You had to say, I think it asked if you arrest them or not, and then or cited them or not.
That's right.
And ask for their race, and did you search them or not.
Right.
And so it's pretty raw data, but I would think overall that even like in those cases things would kind of balance out eventually. I mean, you're not, because minorities aren't the only people speeding on I-5.
So, and I think some of the things like what Chief Louie talked about in Hillsborough, where they showed higher numbers, some of that might have resulted from the fact that if you're stopping gangbangers, it would be the Latino kids, then you'd search them because, you know, and so it'd show more searches. But those are things that need to be looked at.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I think, as I'm thinking about this, we try to let the officers respond to the data. A lot of it is the socioeconomic status, and I believe that's part of racism at large that makes for, you know, that's not the individual officer probably saying, you know, that's just happens to be, I think, the unfortunate thing of the opportunities and for some minorities. So we give an opportunity to respond to the data from the law enforcement. Oregon State Police, I think, did a great response to the data. But we also, with this federal money, are going to be able to do more training on it, tolerance of ethnic minorities. We're working with DPSST to make, you know, I found out some interesting things. We also want to make sure that officers understand what is not racial profiling, so they can understand, just as you did, if you're articulating a lawful basis for a stop that has really nothing to do with racial profiling, we want to make sure that they understand that that's lawful. So that's the area we're getting into, training on that, and trying to collect the data and analyze it.
Great.
Okay. Slide 34, asset forfeiture. To make a long... I'm sorry.
Senator Wesley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Craig, you never answered that question I asked you last year.
I'm sorry, which was...
Well, why in the last 17 stops that Senator Brown incurred in the last 3 years, she was searched every time?
We're still analyzing that data.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Okay. Thank you.
Slide 34.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Asset forfeiture. Asset forfeiture was one of the things that we were supposed to oversee, Asset Forfeiture Oversight Committee. Basically, with Measure 3, basically made there be no more asset forfeiture. So there's no funding, there is no forfeiture, therefore there is no money to staff a position to analyze asset forfeiture. So I've let that issue be dormant.
This notebook.
I just wanted to remind you that, so that if we do asset forfeiture, I know that there is a Senate resolution to kind of, I believe it's a referral to the people, that we could possibly get back to a situation where we would have forfeiture, and it's still in the Constitution that we have an oversight committee, because Measure 3 put it in the Constitution, but I just don't have, it doesn't, there's not much to analyze, and there's not any money derived from it to have anyone analyze it. So that's why I put it in the notebook.
Thank you, Mr. Prince.
Sorry. Okay. Next item, I put in my performance measure overview. You can see we have brand new measures. I'm going to go real quick now through this last part of the budget because we've gotten slowed down here by my own talking too much. We got our November 06, we got brand new performance measures. We have the customer service one that everyone has. Drug court grant administration. What we focused on was, you remember maybe from yesterday, we have the drug court performance measures. This is to measure how we're doing in running the grant program so that we make sure that those grant drug courts that we're funding are meeting or exceeding the grant requirements, and we link that to those performance measures. And then the last performance measure that we just got approved is basically to show that we are a relevant policy generating commission, and that is that the things that we recommend or come out of our task forces are actually receiving legislative hearings, and that was something that we worked on to make sure that it's basically a measure of whether we're relevant or not. In your book, we also you'll see I have my efficiencies in there. I was just going to jump over those and go real quickly to the last tab, if that's okay, which is budget and POPs, and just hit on my budget real quickly. So my budget basically as you have it, assumes that the drug court grants would stay with us at the Criminal Justice Commission. We do have federal support for our statistical analysis, and it's assuming that we're not going to have much asset forfeiture to review. You can see in slide 37 kind of how my agency has expanded and contracted over time. That's basically, again, based upon what I'm asked to do as far as grants to outlay with those, our staff. Slide 38 just shows we are a small agency. Yes.
The $3.6 million of the funds.
Yes.
What are those?
That is the that's the Senate Bill 184, 2% revenue from OLCC. That the way that would flow to drug courts would be an other funds transfer from the Department of Human Services. If you look at Senate Bill 184, it says this money can go to treatment and drug courts. So that's what that is. And that's basically our two POPs. We're on slide 40. Our two POPs are this. The one that you just mentioned, Mr. Chair, and POP 102 is the last page, which is basically, like I said, when I went and got an economist, I pretty much had to use the position authority of most of two research analysts, so I'm asking to have that restored to a research analyst. That research analyst could support Mike Wilson in doing the portfolio work, and that's what POP 102 is. And that's really my presentation. If there's any other questions, I'd be glad to answer them. I'll talk too long.
No, I would just commend you. I think that the work that that you're doing on very touchy subject that's often very polarizing, what we should do about building new prisons. I think no matter where one comes down on that topic, we all think that we should be getting the best bang for the buck that we can, particularly out of the treatment programs that we have, and making sure that our sentencing policies are hitting the sweet spot as far as public safety is concerned.
Chair?
Senator Burdick?
Along those lines, there is a bill that had a hearing in the House, and I don't know the bill number, but it would basically charge the Criminal Justice Commission with developing options when prison populations start to reach capacity. Obviously, building new prisons is one option, but to really go through and name all the options. If that were to make it through the process, would that just have to have its own funding mechanism, or how would that be funded if it made it through the process?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, I think that, and what I testified to in the House committee, is we pretty much are asked as a staff to do that already. We are asked to, because what happens now is an individual legislator will put in a bill to either, you know, we analyze legislative fiscal impacts that increase crimes and decrease crimes. So usually how that analysis happens is ad hoc at the, once we've already started the legislature. And so I think that bill, it's House Bill 2302, I believe, would just formalize that and allow a mechanism to have the commissioners themselves analyze those. So I don't think it would have a fiscal impact. I think we could do that.
Thank you.
Senator Hanna.
Mr. Chair, could we have Doug give a little different explanation? I don't quite understand the SB 184, the OLCC funding. Is that funding being taken away from someone else? Or
no, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, as I understand it, and Linda, please jump in, the funding now probably, this is taking off liquor, not beer and wine, but liquor revenues, of which I don't think any flows except to the general fund.
County is
the other distribution.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, it's dealing with the liquor funds, and I think what the governor's office has done is those revenues have increased pretty dramatically. It would take 2% off the top of that and not disturb the pretty elaborate system of who gets that where. But from a city perspective, doesn't matter where you take it, you're changing that flow in some way. So does that answer?
Follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up.
That directly, yeah, that's exactly. I thought this was the case. It's 2% off the top of the OLCC collected funds, which reduces by 2% the formula that gets paid out to cities and counties.
And general fund.
And the general, well, and the general fund piece.
I need to go check, I guess, on that. I'm not sure. Linda, do you know, since it's a governor's report?
Not well enough. Mr.
And
Chair?
I'll find out.
Actually,
yes.
My understanding is that it's really interesting because fancy liquor sales apparently are just going through the roof, and it's gone up 11%.
Right.
And that 2% comes off of that 11% increase. My understanding, and I could be wrong too, is that it doesn't impact all the others. Everybody just wants their proportionate share of the increase. That's where the pushback you're getting from cities and counties, particularly counties now with what's happening with the rural timber dollar. So. Anyway.
Yeah. So
I will verify
can we just,
that.
Just
send an email or a memo to you all and verify that.
Just to lay it out in a little more detail.
And I came across our OLCC memo that says major issues in the OLCC budget. Quote, the governor's budget includes a transfer of 2% of gross liquor sales revenues to the Department of Human Services for alcohol and substance abuse prevention and addiction treatment. This amounts to an assumed $17 million in revenue before OLCC expenses.
And then, Mr. Chair, the drug court would take 3.6, and the rest would be treatment out of DHS, is my understanding.
And prevention.
So to follow up with the conversation, so if it's 2% of the gross revenue, when we're hearing from cities, it is reducing the amount they would have otherwise received. If liquor sales are on the way up, their piece of whatever the total funding would have been is slightly reduced by the 2% reduction. I mean, when we're having the conversation with them, that's a true statement. Maybe okay, but it's the truth.
And I'll verify that and get back to you.
Okay.
So, Craig, just to clarify, your Michael Wilson's position, he's been doing all this research on the portfolios.
Right.
That is part of the essential budget level, right? And then the top is an additional person.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And what I was trying to say is, you know, in HREs, I had to use the position authority of two research analysts because an economist is a higher classification. So to hire Mike, I had to basically almost destroy, what do they call that, a ball? I burned 1.75 FTE to hire Mike, and so the POP would allow me to hire an analyst full-time to support Mike.
And then another follow-up question. So your essential budget level, if you took out the drug courts, is that the operations cost at $1 million some odd?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, if you took out the drug courts, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Good. Well, I also appreciate that you're open to the idea of trying to figure out which approach, whether it's more of a legislative approach or executive branch approach, works best to make sure we get the best bang for our public safety dollar. Any other questions? All right, is that it for...
Mr. Chair, we do have at least one person signed up for public testimony.
Great.
And then I have an announcement after that. We need to make sure folks know about it.
Good. Is it Ms. Nibbler or Nibbler? Nibbler, if you could please come forward.
It's only one person that wants to testify?
Ready when you are.
Okay. Chair Shield. I'm here representing the League of Women Voters, but I thought I should explain first why I'm even participating in the league process. And I have background in this area. I worked in juvenile corrections or as a juvenile counselor for 14 years and also worked in education and learning disabilities before that. So I have some experience in this field. And when I was working, I was a liaison to a lot of other committees and tried to figure out, you know, how the system worked and how to work it the best way we could to get things done within the system. And, you know, as a result, we also had trainings every year about the changes that came from the legislature. So I was very interested in how the changes got made, because lots of times, you know, a change would be made in one area that impacted others, and it kind of looked like, you know, they didn't know what was going to happen ahead of time. So this kind of interested me, and so when I retired, I decided I'd come and kind of monitor and watch the legislature and see how these changes came about. And so one of the first times I came, they had one of these little skits to show about how the system worked, and I thought, thank goodness, at least they're looking at the whole system. So I was really pleased about that. And then I saw that the Criminal Justice Commission published this, and I was really pleased to see that they were looking at the whole system and, you know, how different parts were impacting each other and how some parts were costing more than others and some areas of the system were losing out. So I thought, thank goodness somebody is looking at this. So so I had to take the opportunity to come and testify about it. So I represent the League of Women Voters, and I work on their social policy issues, and we have a written letter on this budget. So I'll just read that into the record. The League of Women Voters of Oregon is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government in order to build better communities statewide. The League received a copy of the Criminal Justice Commission report to the legislature for January 2007 and noted that the Criminal Justice Commission had refocused on long-range planning for Oregon's criminal justice system following the 2005 legislative session. The League was impressed with the cost analysis done in the Incarceration Costs and Crime article, as well as the discussion of the use of risk assessment tool to be used in sentencing for the purpose of reducing crime. The League also has positions on different areas, and we have one on adult corrections that strongly favors the use of alternatives to incarceration where possible and supports community-based programs. The League also believes that maximum security prisons are needed for violent criminals judged dangerous to society. The League also favors minimum security regional treatment and or program-focused facilities for new programs. Prison programs should provide each inmate with educational and vocational training, opportunities for work, and adequate medical and mental health care. The League believes that comprehensive transitional programs are essential for successful completion of rehabilitation for each inmate. And I noticed that some of those things have been lacking in the system recently, and so we would like to see them, you know, restored in the system. The League supported the adoption of the sentencing guidelines and believes that judges should be responsible for determining the length of sentences. The League encourages the Criminal Justice Commission to continue to evaluate the criminal justice system and supports the expansion of its role as well as the expansion of its budget. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Questions?
How many people coming out of prison is the League hired into your programs? Do you mean to run your programs? Have you hired any women coming out or men?
Actually, we hire very few people. Almost all of ours are volunteers.
I asked that because that one time I was at a meeting and where a retired judge was asking businessmen hire ex-convicts, and one of them said, well, I'm not going to hire them. I'm going to hire some kid out of Benson that's doing well. And so, I mean, that's always the problem. I know Representative Shields work really hard to help people get restructured in the community. But people say that, and I just hope if we're going to do that, everybody needs to hire somebody, you know, to help get that program going.
Do you have any opinions, Representative Parker?
Well, you think that's important? How are you going to?
I do. In fact, I think there's some efforts to try to figure out the different barriers that people have to employment.
And some of them, because they're convicts, have trouble qualifying for licenses. In some cases, I'm not sure how that stands in Oregon, but I know at Attica, during that thing, you know,
had one of the programs there was to train people to be barbers. And then if you're an ex-convict, you can't be a barber in New York. So it's like...
Yeah, there's no point in training them.
Those things are all interconnected and need to be carefully looked
at. Yeah, and I didn't mean to make light of the situation. Just
no, that's fine.
A slight joke to... But,
lighten it up a bit.
But I think, you're dead on. The number of people that have been in trouble with the law is large in our society. I think we're at a point now where what I think... One out of, 20 people have been on probation or parole at some point in their lifetime. And a lot of people who've done the type of treatment programs and are trying to turn their lives around into second chance.
Well, incarceration isn't the only answer. I mean, there should be a lot of things that we should do up front that are cheaper to do, rather than just locking them up for long periods of time. So, and then before they get out of prison, if you can work on them a little bit and give them drug and alcohol treatment or some kind of job training or something to help them once they get out. But it really bothers me if they go in and they don't get any drug and alcohol treatment at all while they're in there, because like 70% of them have drug and alcohol problems. So we really ought to build up that drug and alcohol treatment piece, I think. For my opinion.
Things like kids start going now so that our grandkids won't be sitting in here making the same decision.
Yeah.
Well, Ms. Sibler, we sure do appreciate you coming down to testify. Thanks. And then we have a couple of announcements.
Mr. Chair, just to make sure, on Monday we have scheduled a tour of the state penitentiary. For those that want to, I think judiciary committees may have gone through earlier in the session, but I've asked the department to zero in on, given that we have a rather short time, on things that are policy packages in their budget. So I'm sure we'll spend a little time on their mental health area, as well as deferred maintenance needs, which are two very important policy packages they brought forward. We will need to leave by 2:45 and probably return around 5. It's a rather short time period because it does take a little bit of time to get in and out of the prison. Hopefully longer getting in and out. Nice. If you have staff that want to attend, please have them send me their names or give me their names so I can send them an email and get the right information. For some reason, they don't do background checks on legislators, but they do on staff.
It's
Monday afternoon at 2:45, this coming Monday.
No blue jeans.
Well, let me then talk. If that's a problem for folks, let me know. Maybe we can delay it a day and do it Tuesday.
Thanks, Jenny.
I just raised the point that Monday is our bill deadline date. So some of us or some of us.
Representative Nathanson's talking a lot.
And we're all listening carefully.
She said that Monday is the bill drop day, so make sure you get your bills dropped before
you go. Thank you.
Well, the point was maybe
it's by noon.
The tour could be a different day if some of us feel like we're going to be pressed on that day.
Isn't it a noon deadline?
Is it?
I don't know what time it is, but
I
don't
know.
Have to get him done.
What do I know?
June this week. June Friday.
Well, I mean, if you think that you really will need that time, you can go on a different day.
That's fine. Sure. Thank you.
And the department has offered, if you want to taste the fine cuisine, they'll extend the tour for anyone that wants it and also feed them over at the minimum that's next door to the state penitentiary.
Outdated green bologna, but it's really pretty good.
No comment on that.
Are
we going to take a van? We meet again in front of the Capitol at 2:45 and then return by 5 is the plan.
And then also tomorrow we're going to have a presentation about OWIN, which could be a very important topic for this legislative session, for those of you who haven't been briefed on it particularly. And then the day after that we begin our DOC presentation, which will last about 6 or 7 days. So we'll do at least one day of public testimony, depending on how many people show up, we might do two. So if any of your constituents want to weigh in on the Department of Corrections budget, Doug can tell you when that day is going to be.
We'll figure it out by the start date, or Thursday we'll announce what day of public testimony is.
And also I wanted to mention, we're looking at trying to do an offsite of meeting that focuses on Head Start in Representative Cameron's district at some point. And then we're also looking at going out to Hillsborough at some point during the session to focus on community corrections. And if you have anybody in mind that you might like to have be part of the expert testimony, if you could please talk to me or to Doug, and we'll certainly consider that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
In the Hillsborough one, are we actually going to tour their community corrections?
It'll be at the
facility?
Justice Center, yeah.
It is really worth doing. I'm glad you're doing that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? This meeting is adjourned.